maybe there's some questions and comments.
I'm noticing how I'm using family or people that I live with as my excuse, because they don't practice the way I practice. And yet I'm just watching how in my life I'm thinking how I use their lack of practice for me not to continue to be more disciplined. And it's so easy for me to go, yeah, when my mom wakes and I'll go back to Berlin. And it's just so habitual for me to let it slide over and over again because of some need to want to please other people in their life, or, you know, it, what if they don't like it and it's inconvenient for them, or it's just always some excuse for not. It's easy alone.
Okay, so this is a very good insight. How we use the people we live with and our family as an excuse for our not taking the time we need to be calm and to deepen our own spiritual practice. So maybe we live with people who don't practice, and so then we're very afraid of what they're going to think, we're afraid of offending them, we're afraid of intruding on their lifestyle. Of course, when they don't take out the garbage and when we want them to, we're not afraid at that time of telling them what we think. Yeah, but when it comes to doing our spiritual practice, oh, they might be offended and they may not like it. It may be inconveniencing for them. And so how we use the people we live with as an excuse for us not to, you know, do our spiritual practice, or even not to do exercise, you know, if we don't get enough exercise, or to do yoga, or to do something that's healthy even for our body. You know, we use our family for an excuse. I have to take care of my family. I don't want to upset them. If I say I'm a Buddhist, you know, as if we have to go in and make a declaration. Okay, Mom, Dad, you need to know from today on I am a Buddhist. Huh? You know, I don't think we really need to talk to people that way. Maybe you're not a Buddhist. Maybe you're a something else, you know. I mean... But it's funny how we use other people. And you know what's very hooking about that is because spiritual traditions teach us to be kind and compassionate and considerate. So then we say, well, I'm being kind and compassionate and considerate by not doing my practice in front of these people who may get upset by my doing my practice. So you see, I'm living the values. We got it down really well, you know? And then what you were saying, you know, okay, after my mother passes, then I'll do my spiritual practice. You know, after I sell the house and move to a quieter place, I'll do my spiritual practice. After I cut down on the number of hours I'm working, I'll do my practice. After the kids go back to school, I'll do my practice. In October, after Halloween, I'll do my practice. After Thanksgiving, I'll do my practice because I've got to get that turkey ready. You know, that vegetarian turkey. Then Christmas is totally nutty, you know. They can't do any practice before Christmas, so after Christmas we do the practice. Then January, you know, there's no holiday anymore. No, Martin Luther King. Oh, yeah, well, that's the 1st of January. And after Martin Luther King, you know, because I got to educate the kids about, you know, Martin Luther King, so then give me a practice. Then February, Valentine's Day. No, can't practice with Valentine's Day coming up because that's where I'm really showing my love and compassion to everybody, so can't practice. Then March, can't practice because Easter's coming up. April, there's taxes, so forget that. May is Mother's Day. August is July. June is Father's Day. August is the 4th. July is the 4th of July. And August, we all go on holiday. And then we're back in September going back to school, okay? So you see, we're always going to practice after all the preparations for some big event finish. that.
Yeah.
It's always like that, isn't it? And who puts us in that situation? We put ourselves there, don't we? Don't we?
I had a long argument with myself here about something I considered a way to relax. Mm-hmm. And he stressed that. The production of music or the performance of music to relieve stress or whatever. it turns out that it's more so an excessive attachment to something that's more or less self-destructive, so to speak. Because I have this image of me, and then I'm taking this little piece of me and ripping it out and putting it into something and becoming so obsessed about it, trying to make it perfect, and that is kind of horrible, actually.
Okay, so you're talking specifically about producing music.
Yeah.
And it's like you take a part of yourself, or you become embodied by the music that you produce. So that music is you, you know, and so then it's got to be perfect and it's got to be fantastic and everybody's got to appreciate it, you know, and give you the praise, you know, for it. And it's, you know, and then the mind just gets really obsessed about that.
Yeah.
And then how counterproductive that is for your own well-being.
So that's like any creative endeavor.
It depends on the motivation with which we do a creative endeavor. Okay.
I can agree with that.
Yeah.
It takes a lot.
There's many different motivations, you know, for a creative endeavor. Most commonly, it's the one that you're speaking of, you know. It's like there's a part of me that needs to be expressed and I'm going to put it out there for the world to know and appreciate and praise. Or even if they criticize, still I'm getting some attention to, you know, what's going on. And so I'm putting it out there. So that motivation is very much a me motivation, isn't it? Yeah, a self-centered motivation. I'm wanting some recognition, good or bad or something, from my creative endeavor. There's another kind of creative endeavor where you can really do it for the benefit of sentient beings. You might notice that all of these paintings that you see here, do you see the artist's name on any of them?
I noticed yesterday that the photograph is...
That's His Holiness's signature. Yeah? That's His Holiness writing his name in Tibetan. No, it's a photograph. That's His Holiness's signature. None of these have the signature of the artist. Lama Zopa wrote a dedication on the white tire one that he gifted us. He wasn't the artist on it. No. It's quite interesting. You see spiritual painting. You don't know who painted it. Yeah, I can't tell you the name of one famous Buddhist artist. Yeah. Of course, I may not know even if somebody else knew the names, you know. But it's quite interesting, you know. And I think it's done that way deliberately, that the I is taken out of it. Our name is not associated with it. It's just done out of devotion, out of the wish to create merit for yourself and others to reap the benefit of. Mm-hmm. I find it when I was in China in, when did I go? It must have been 93, 94. I went on a pilgrimage in China. And you know, in these caves in Dunhuang, so Dunhuang is on the Silk Road, and they had these incredible Buddhist caves there that had actually been covered over and sealed until the early 20th century when somebody found them, and now the Chinese government is opening them up. but they're enormous caves, and you walk in, and not only are there paintings all along the wall, but there are sculpted figures in the center. So you walk into a room with the Buddha, a huge Buddha, and his disciples sitting there. It's really stunning. You know, the artistry is amazing. And when I think of what it took to paint these things, because they were painted over a period of many, many years, you know, where they didn't have cranes that lifted the artist up, and, you know, they didn't have all these modern conveniences. And all these people gave their whole life to making this incredibly inspiring Buddhist art, and we don't even know their names. Yeah? And to me that says, wow, you know, because we know the names of a lot of Western great religious artists, don't we? Mm-hmm. Yeah? But of the great Asian artists, the religious artists, we don't always know their names. And yet they gave their life energy, you know, to produce this kind of creative work. So that's why I said it depends a lot on what our motivation is. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Could you elaborate about this piece on what a well-balanced life might look like?
Okay. So could I elaborate on what a well-balanced life might look like? Well, it's going to look different for different people. Because people have different mental states, people have different physical abilities. So everybody's got to find balance for themselves. And also, what is balance for us at one point in our life is not going to always remain so. It's going to change, and we're always at this point of rebalancing ourselves, because we live in a world that's changing, and our body and mind are always changing. So it's not like you figure out what's balanced for you and then you stay there forever. Yeah, balance isn't static. But some elements, I think, that are part of a balanced life are, you know, spiritual practice. And I think especially first thing in the morning when we get up, to set the tone for the day and the motivation for the day. I think some spiritual practice, whether it's meditating or reading or doing some ritual or something where we can focus our mind on what exists beyond our ego, or what is a remedy to our self-centered mind. Okay, into ignorance, anger, and attachment. So I think some spiritual practice each day, morning and evening, is best, you know. Or maybe certain points during the day you check up and do some spiritual practice. If you look at the Srivasti Abbey schedule, you know, we have morning and evening meditation, and then we offer our food before each meal. After lunch, we do a dedication and some chanting. So these are all ways of, you know, coming back to our spiritual practice during the day and reminding us of our values and centering ourselves, you know. So I think some time for that. I think exercise is also very important. Now, by exercise, I don't mean putting on your headphones, playing blaring music, and jogging in a gym with your new, you know, the special clothes that you've gotten just to go to the gym, you know? So you have to have special clothes to go to the gym. You can't just go in your eighth grade PE shorts. Yeah. You have to have special clothes so that you look good at the gym while you are sweating profusely. Okay. And, you know, you need the band across here, you know. Or if you're going bicycle riding, you know, you can't just do it in whatever kind of pants. You have to have these tight pants that are kind of bright blue, and your special helmet and the fancy gadgets and the whole thing, okay? You know, and then also you're plugged in, yeah? So I would say some exercise every day, preferably in nature, you know, not in a gym, yeah, but sometime outdoors where you can feel the air, the natural air, instead of heated or air-conned air, you know, where you can look long distances, where you can see nature. I think that's incredibly important, actually, for some balance in our life. If you live in a city, go to the park, you know, go to the top of your building and look at the stars, you know, something. Okay? So exercise. You know, some sleep, not too little and not too much. That's hard because we don't know what kind of sleep we need. You know, sometimes we say, well, if I sleep until I wake up, that must be how much sleep I need. Well, I know for myself that doesn't work, because if I sleep until I wake up, it's more sleep than I actually need. Okay, so, you know, you have to find out what kind of rest your body and mind needs. You know? And I think sleeping in a room without the brr of a computer going on, you know, don't sleep in a room with a computer. Even if the computer's off, you wake up in the morning and you see the computer, yeah, or the television set. So I think even, you know, I can tell you some of the things I think not to do in a balanced life. Well, like I said, don't have a computer or TV in the bed, in the room you sleep in. Don't watch TV right before you go to sleep, you know. Don't be doing some kind of, you know, frenzied worldly work on your computer right before you go to sleep, because then that's going to influence you, you know. You know, if you're reading a Dharma article online, that's something different. If you just, you know, surfing the web and all that, you go to sleep with all that energy. That's not healthy. Okay? I think doing some service work with a good motivation. So you'll notice, you know, at the end of the morning session here, we do the prayer of offering service. So, you know, you set your motivation every day before you go to work, whatever your job is. You just take some time and set your motivation and know why you're going to work, and really try and cultivate a mind that says, I want to not only benefit all of society and whoever my clients or, you know, or the customers, you know, by means of my work, but I also want to be a positive force in my workplace and give some kindness to my colleagues and the other people I'm working with. So having that kind of motivation and trying to practice like that. And I think, you know, get rid of the machines where you listen to music, you know, and you're plugged in. You know, I really saw the difference when I was in Germany this summer, First Holiness's conference. And you know, when you walk down the street there, not everybody is plugged in listening to an iPod. Whereas you walk down most streets in a U.S. city, and people, you know, they're plugged in with their iPod or they're with their cell phone. In Germany, very few people were walking down the street talking to a cell phone. Now, you know, we're walking down the street with a cell phone here, you know, and an iPod here, and oh, and our coffee, you know, now you know. We like Chenrezig with 1,000 apps because, you know, our coffee, and then our BlackBerry, you know, so we're also, our thumbs now are getting too stressed because we're, you know, text messaging people all the time. And, you know, we're just too plugged in. Yeah? So I think that creates a certain kind of level of stress with us, you know. And so just to cool that a little bit. Right? And especially the cell phone use. I just watch people who who live together call each other 10 times during the day. Yeah? And just always calling people. And for me, I notice the more we get interrupted when we're trying to work in a concentrated way, the more we get interrupted, the more we get irritable and the more restless we get. And so that constant kind of cell phone use, I think, contributes to that. I think drive as little as possible and arrange your shopping schedule so that you do many errands all at one time. Because that's another thing I see people do that makes them very frenetic is, oh, I need some milk. Got to get in the car, drive it somewhere and get some milk. Then the next day, oh, I need some donuts. Get in the car, drive it, get some donuts. Then the next day, I need some string beans. You know, so rather than thinking ahead, you know, today's Monday. What am I going to need from now until the next Monday? All the things I could possibly need. And I'm going to go out and get them all at one time. So I use my time wisely. I run all the errands if I have to go to the bank or the post office, the auto store or whatever I go. I get all the things together and I do it all at one time. And then the rest of the days, I don't go shopping. Yeah, saves a lot of time, saves a lot of gas. And it makes our mind so much more relaxed. Because every day when we're getting in the car going out to get our one object of attachment for that day, and then we're going in the store. How do we ever get just the one thing we went in the store to get? No, we always go and get a few extra things, and then we're in the store with the music, together with people who are all plugged in, and then we worry about, I don't fit in because I'm not plugged in like they are. You know, where's my iPod? Where's my BlackBerry? Where's my this and that? You know, so we get all those messages, and so, you know, it kind of goes like this. So I think a lot of living a balanced life is learning to discriminate what is useful for the kind of work that we're doing and the kind of happiness we're seeking, and what just gets us more revved up and is counterproductive. And so having that discriminating wisdom, to have that kind of wisdom, we need to have some quiet time where we can think about things. And if we keep our life so busy that we don't have any time to think, then that's how all this just takes hold of us. Okay. So let's sit quietly for a few minutes. We'll have a little bit longer meditation this time. You know, maybe 5 whole minutes. But maybe a little longer. But just think a little bit about, you know, what we talked about and what you want to do and not do in your life. And how you can be balanced.